Have you heard about the recent alcohol bans in the Northern Territory? Liquor laws were passed a couple of nights ago in response to what police, the leader of the opposition, and a large chunk of the media were calling a crime wave in January this year. There are now major restrictions on the sale of alcohol in Alice Springs and remote communities of the Northern Territory. For many not living in the territory, news of the alcohol and crime wave came as a surprise. However, alcohol bans have been a hotly debated issue within the town of Alice Springs for over a decade. Today on The Daily, we have Thalia Anthony, a professor of law at the University of Technology, Sydney. She joins us for a chat about the usefulness of alcohol bans in stopping crime, with particular attention to the NT. Professor, thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks, Georgia. Good to talk with you.
Thank you. From a legal perspective, what do you think has prompted police, government and the media to zero in on alcohol and crime in Alice Springs this year?
Well, I think this time of the year, like around summer, there is a lot of mobilisation of Aboriginal people to Alice Springs and coming from remote communities. We've seen this summer in the Northern Territory. A mix of both very hot conditions and many power shortages and grave issues regarding housing and overcrowding, and those types of push factors have meant there are more people in Alice Springs, or Aboriginal people, and this has kind of created a frenzy around crime, which really began with this sense that there was damage to businesses, and it's then developed into assault, and it's now being framed as parents sexually abusing their children. So my reading of it, because it's something that has happened, this type of frenzy has happened over many years, is that people are latching onto what's going on in Alice Springs and creating all these different narratives to justify reintroducing the Northern Territory intervention, which was data sunset clause in the middle of the year. So it's kind of being a hook in order to reignite this debate around how Aboriginal people should be controlled.
There seems to be sort of a zeroing in on alcohol, and then after banning alcohol, our Prime Minister pledged taxpayer money to high visibility police and more CCTV lighting. What do you make of the decision to announce like a ramping up of surveillance and constricting rights to alcohol when there seem to be much greater issues below the surface here, as you were saying, housing, you know, long-running other issues relating to rights in the area. Why do you think the Prime Minister announced those sorts of measures instead of, you know, tackling the depth of the issues at heart?
The media and a lot of the, I guess, more dominant white voices in Alice Springs, especially the council mayor in Alice Springs and business leaders coming out and honing in on the alcohol issue and attributing alcohol to what they see as particularly high levels of crime, has directed the debate, the political debate. And they, as I said, they've explicitly been calling for the reintroduction of widespread alcohol bans focused only on Aboriginal people. So that kind of pressure in the media basically made this a national issue. I think it's exactly the opposite of what is needed. I think Aboriginal people on the ground are aware of these underlying issues, which really stem from poverty and a lack of government resourcing of key facilities and basic needs. So this kind of quick response that, you know, Anthony Albanese flies in with the support of Peter Dutton, that is kind of it's a political response. It's not a response that is driven by the needs of Aboriginal people, because the reality is, unless you are living in Aboriginal communities and unless you are, you know, trying to bring up kids and trying to survive in those communities, it's really you know, these are holistic solutions that people are calling for. They're not easy solutions like having discriminatory bans on alcohol, which appear very popular and appear to people in Sydney or Melbourne or Brisbane to be the solution. And I think that what the Prime Minister should have done is to have, you know, these proper types of support for structures that enable Aboriginal people to set the agenda. And the alcohol policy that's just been passed this week is basically a set of bans that enables Aboriginal people to opt out of, but in a very structured way. This isn't an Aboriginal-led approach. It's basically, here's the policy, and if you can meet all our criteria, you can opt out. A bit like citizenship in the 1950s, you know. Aboriginal people, you're a ward of the state unless you can prove to us that you have the right qualities to be a citizen. And that kind of state control mentality has existed for decades, and it's exactly why we have the problem we have today.
Thank you. Thanks for that response. In terms of like the history of alcohol in the Northern Territory from a legal perspective, has a ban ever had a positive outcome, and why has this long-running alcohol ban policy been the most contentious issue in the Northern Territory? When did it start, and how did we get here?
Well, the first restrictions on alcohol, at least in recent decades, were introduced by Aboriginal communities themselves. They were aware of what was needed. They were aware of where Aboriginal people should safely drink, which was often just on the outskirts of communities. And so they declared themselves dry communities, and that worked really well until the Northern Territory intervention, which then required the suspension of the Racial Discrimination Act, and that act exists to protect against racial discrimination, so effectively allowed racial discrimination in order for the government to set the terms of the alcohol bans. And that was under the Howard government, but extended under Labor when the Rudd government got in. And basically, it's a way in which the government can draw on this trope that Aboriginal people can't control their alcohol. And the irony is that these self-determined restrictions were exactly controlling their alcohol and doing it for the good of the community. Mm. Instead, the government comes in with these discriminatory measures. And what we see in the reporting, if you go back to 2010, 3 years after the measures were introduced, Alice Springs is declared the stabbing capital of the world. Mm. So at the, you know, the height of these restrictions, there is no evidence that there is high levels of safety in community. And yet when, and you see this concern over Alice Springs be rehashed every few years, and there's the same response: restrict alcohol and make punishment harsher. Mm. And what we're seeing today is that after doing that more and more, the outcomes in terms of community safety allegedly are worse. Mm. And certainly the poverty in communities is much worse. And I think that's part of it, because what the government has done, which you raised earlier in the interview, they've gone and invested resources into controlling alcohol because it becomes a crime to drink alcohol, putting more police on the streets, putting more surveillance, making more prisons, rather than say the root cause or the root issue here is the lack of resources going to communities. So all the money becomes on control rather than empowerment and enabling communities to flourish. And so I think the law is a really weak instrument, and it in many cases makes the problem worse.
Thank you so much. We're almost out of time. This is a really important conversation, but I feel like we should end on the fact that the media has a huge role to play in the way this issue is framed. Just quickly, how can we ask the right questions when it comes to you know, crime, or even focusing on crime? Is the right thing, is that the right thing to do here? How can we better shape this this debate?
Yeah, I have concerns when it becomes all about crime. I think the right questions are about people's well-being. And when we talk about well-being, it is well-being in terms of safety, but also the strength of culture and community, the strength of First Nations laws. All of these things are interrelated. And what a crime is often just defined by the state. So if we think of crime in terms of stealing land, if we think of crime in terms of deaths in custody, you know, we have a very different type of debate. But the way in which crime is presented by the media is Aboriginal people are the problem. And I think that creates policy, media, often media-fueled policy, knee-jerk policy, that just means that rather than look at the very complex issues of colonisation and the harm it's doing, that gets lost. And so I think the way in which the media asks questions needs to be a lot more about the well-being of people, but it also needs to be asking the right people. And I think those people are on the ground in remote communities, really, I think, strong Aboriginal organisations like Tungundjeri Council that are responsible for town camps in Alice Springs, an Aboriginal-run organisation also responsible for safety, family violence initiatives. I think speaking to the right issues, asking questions that are not colonial types of questions that assume Aboriginal deficit. That's what media need to do. And I mean, you know, I just think we need more diverse media. I think 2SER is a great example, more Aboriginal media. Instead, we have media that is absolutely in support of dominant hegemonic interests in society. And I think we, you know, those who are listening to media need to be aware of that as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Thanks for taking time out of your day. We really appreciate it, and we'll keep talking about this issue. Yeah, we much appreciate it.
Thanks, George. I appreciate it too. It's good to talk with you.
That was Professor Thalia Anthony from the University of Technology, Sydney, chatting about the usefulness of alcohol bans in stopping crime, and with a particular attention to the Northern Territory bans.